Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Nampak pre-close period conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Eric Smuts. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. And first of all, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon for our pre-close trading update. I'm going to start by giving a quick summary of the document that I'm sure you've all seen. And thereafter, Glenn will give you a bit more detail on the financial side. So maybe to start off with, I think we all understand that this has been a particularly difficult year globally. And I think, of course, Nampak has not been spared the impact of COVID. So overall, I think it's fair to say it was a year characterized by weak economic climate and pressure on consumers' disposable income during the first half of the year. And then this was exacerbated by an even more challenging second half due to COVID. I think we all know this was related to the lockdowns that we experienced in most of the territories we operate. There was the ban on alcohol sales that obviously had quite a big impact on our overall demand. And, of course, the restrictions on social events that impacted on people's ability to socialize and enjoy some of the packaging or the products for which our packaging is used. All of these impacted negatively on overall volumes, and it is expected that this will reduce our profits for the year. But trading levels are slowly busy recovering, and in some markets, of course, faster than others. I think on the bright side, there's quite a number of things to look at. First of all, significant progress was made in reducing our US dollar debt, defending our market share, and also developing new growth opportunities. Some of the details of these include, first of all, the renewal of some substantial supply contracts. And let me start with South Africa, where we've managed to renegotiate the extension of a multinational customer, where we've secured an allocation of 85% for the next 3 years. So this will really make a big difference in assisting us to defend our market share in South Africa going forward. Then in Nigeria, we've also secured another 3-year agreement. This was also extension, where before we had an allocation of around 50%, and based on various factors, we managed to secure 100% of this customer's volume, and that should enable us to actually grow our market share in Nigeria. So definitely something that we are very pleased with. Then I think almost a bigger thing to mention is we've managed to secure some very substantial export contracts for the next year, with potential demand in excess of 800 million additional can bodies. Now, maybe just to explain that, 800 million cans is almost the equivalent of taking one of our existing production lines and fully utilize that for the whole year. So if you consider that in South Africa we've got 5 production lines, then you can imagine the impact of taking one of those and fully dedicating it to export volumes for a full year. So something that we are very excited about. Then we're also in the process of developing some new growth opportunities. And the first one is through a new joint venture that we've concluded with Elopak of Norway. And this is for the supply of gable top cartons for both the fresh and aseptic beverage markets in sub-Saharan Africa. So this will obviously not only focus on South Africa, but specifically in the whole sub-Saharan African market, where I think it will give us substantial benefit going forward. Then we've also made significant progress in the restructuring of both our plastics and diff food operations in order to make them much more profitable going forward. And lastly, as committed, we have successfully managed to reduce our dollar-denominated debt, but I will leave it to Glenn to give you more details on the financial overview. And, yeah, Glenn, over to you for the financial side.
Good afternoon to everybody, and Good morning to those in foreign countries west of us. It's certainly been a challenging period that I think has shown the resilience of Nampak. We've been impacted by COVID at a profitability level. It's impacted cash generation, and consequently, our covenants have had to be renegotiated. The COVID effects have been significant. On top of that, we've had a significant slowdown in Angola, and those are really the two major reasons for the covenant renegotiation. If we had not had those particular impacts, we had committed to disposing of three particular assets in the form of the glass business, the cartons business in Nigeria, and Nampak Plastics Europe. We had achieved all of those, and the proceeds that we'd received from those disposals would have certainly put the group in a good position. The effects of the pullback in the profitability have impacted the EBITDA levels, and consequently, one has had to have a relook at the covenant levels. On an operational basis, I think the group has made good strides in addressing its cost base. There have been salary sacrifices by the staff and the main board, including the non-executive directors. We've assisted cash generation through, I think, very swift action in adjusting our working capital levels to new demand levels, and that is certainly going to assist and complement the cash generation for the period. We've certainly focused on addressing the mix of our rand and dollar denominated debt as we committed to. We have repaid $100 million worth of dollar denominated debt. We converted 1.4 billion rands, which was the proceeds from the disposal of the glass asset, into $84 million. The Reserve Bank approval reduced that foreign debt by $84 million. We complemented that by a further $16 million from the disposal of the Cartons Nigerian business. So that brought the total reduction in the dollar-denominated debt to $100 million. Pleasingly, gross debt is reduced by 21%, and we are slowly reducing the mix of the dollar debt within the total component. That has come down from 75% down to 65%. Feature of the period has been a relatively volatile rand-dollar exchange rate. There is a slight improvement on the March position, but it certainly has been volatile during the period. The group remains very well funded. Certain facilities are clearly not usable because of the limitation linked to the COVID impact on EBITDA. We have also, as part of the review of the facilities, right-sized the size of the banking facility. When the facility was put in place in September 2018, there was a particular transaction that was being contemplated that we no longer require, and therefore the facilities have been right-sized to exclude that. We've also addressed the mix between the rand dollar, and we still remain very well funded and with significant headroom in our covenants. The covenants have been relaxed for two periods, and effectively will be measured on a quarterly basis. But we've got a relaxation of those covenants to essentially the 31st of March 2021. And if I can just remind you that those covenant positions are measured on a rolling 12-month EBITDA position relative to the debt, and also relative to the interest cost. And it will take some time for the lagging effect of COVID to fall outside of that calculation, and therefore we've needed a headroom put into those covenants until that point in time. The focus for the period has been on margin improvement and cost reduction, very clear focus on cash generation and working capital management, tight control of CapEx. We've adopted a very conservative approach, and we've managed it in a good way. We will come in below our initial expectations, and the CapEx guidance remains. We are committed to reducing the group's debt and strengthening the group's balance sheet. We will be exploring the sale of certain assets with a focus on reducing gearing, and also to complement that position, strongly managing our working capital and capital expenditure and improving our operating performance. We've had very good cash transfers during the period from our Angolan and Nigerian geographies, with a total of $2.2 billion transferred in the period, $1 billion from Angola and $1.2 billion from Nigeria. There are moderate cash levels left in those countries which are used to finance the working capital. In Angola, we have 75% of that cash balance hedged. There is no economic hedge available within the Nigerian economy. The governance we've set out in the SENS announcements, and you can see that there's been some detailed thought that's gone into that. As the business, you know, comes out of the COVID period and produces expected operating profits and EBITDA, the covenants will tend back towards the originally contracted levels of 3x net debt to EBITDA and 4x EBITDA interest cover. The foreign exchange movements in the period, there's been certain volatility in all the exchange rates, overall a weaker position in the rand on average. The Kwanza has been the big feature where that has weakened by 60%. There's been a relatively stable Naira, very material devaluation in the Zimbabwe currency where that's devalued by greater than 440%. But one would need to understand when you convert back to the rand dollar exchange rate, we take into account the devaluation, but we also have to apply the hyperinflation accounting principles to this. We're in the process of doing those very typical accounting calculations for the year end, and the hyperinflation effect will compensate for the devaluation of the currency. Capital expenditure guidance, as I indicated, will be between $600 and $675 million, which is in line with what we indicated at the interim, in fact, slightly lower. I hope that gives you a good overall perspective of the funding and the big strides forward on reducing the dollar-denominated debt.
Thank you, Glenn. So I think just to close it off, I think let's quickly talk about the way forward. I think as Glenn pointed out, CapEx has been very well controlled during the current year, but for the next 2 years, we believe that we can keep CapEx to below $350 million per year. As we pointed out, we currently have a very well capitalized asset base, and hence we don't see any need for massive CapExes in our core businesses. Then we also mentioned that a portfolio review of assets will get consideration to divest from those businesses with either a poor strategic fit or those that are that will reduce complexity, and of course those that are unlikely to provide adequate returns. We will utilize the proceeds to reduce leverage and improve our overall balance sheet. So in summary, as per the quote that we had on our SENS announcement, our short to medium term focus is to proactively deleverage and reduce currency and operational risk to the business. We believe that macro environment will continue to be muted to some extent for the next 6 to 12 months, but our current strategies will ensure that Nampak produce much improved results and emerge as a lower risk organization with a stronger balance sheet. Thank you very much, and we will now open the floor for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then two to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. We will pause to see if there are any questions. The first question comes from James Twyman from Prescient. Please go ahead, James.
Yes, hello, thank you. I've got a couple of questions. First one, on Nigeria, just wanted to get some idea of the importance of that new contract. What sort of increase in sales do you think that would give to you? And secondly, on the export business, you talk about 800 million cans. Is that sort of what you'd like it to be, or is that a contract that you have for 800 million? I.e., have you started the beginnings of something, or have you reached the end of that? Thanks.
Okay. James, thank you very much for those two questions. So first of all, in Nigeria, it is one of our biggest customers. So this is a very substantial contract that we have. We unfortunately can't disclose the value of it, etc. But in Nigeria, you essentially have three or four big customers. So this is one of the very big ones, and hence a move from 50% to 100% is a substantial increase in market share. I think something to point out there, this contract was in place from the 1st of July. So in July, you know, the customer still had to buy some stock from our competitor that they still had in place. And as a result, we didn't see the uptick on that on those volumes in July. But as mentioned in our update, in August, we've already had a record month for August with substantially higher volumes than what we did last year. And then we're not quite close with September yet, but it's already clear that September will be very similar in terms of the margin by which we have beaten last year's volumes. So if you look at the last 2 months, our volumes are substantially up on pre-COVID volumes. Now, it's only 2 months, so I don't think we should say that, you can just extrapolate that going forward. But I think it's fair to say that the market in Nigeria has recovered a lot quicker than in the rest of the world, or the market at least where we operate. And that's been partly because of just the sort of resilience of the can pack in Nigeria, but of course also on the back of the market share gains that we achieved through this contract. So, very, very positive in Nigeria. And then your second question related to the export contracts. In fact, we just started with those contracts. We have supplied the first batch has been shipped during September, so we've just started that. The contract that we have for 800 million, and we got to be careful how we word it. So the contract is for, it's got a minimum volume in, which is not 800 million. It's a little bit less than that. But the indications we got from the customer is that this could be in excess of 800 million cans. So it's not a fixed number, but essentially we've just started with that, and that is expected to take us through the next 12 months.
Thank you. Is it a one-year, one-off deal, or is it something that could continue going forward?
This is a once-off deal at this point in time. Of course, there is the potential to extend that if demand remains and capacities and all those things. But at the moment, it's a once-off contract. But of course, the particular size that the customer wants, the tooling for that, we now have all of that. Therefore, if the opportunity comes up again, it means we already have the tooling for it, and then it literally they can place an order with a phone call where, as you can imagine, to bring new tooling in, et cetera, took quite a while. And therefore, there was a lot more preparation work required for this order. But now that we've got it in place, we can react on a very short-term basis. And keeping in mind that our business is quite seasonal, and depending on whether you're in the southern hemisphere or northern hemisphere, it either means if we want to export to a customer in the southern hemisphere, it will put pressure on our capacity when we are in peak time. However, the opposite, of course, is also true, and therefore for both Asia, Europe, and North America, they have their summer when we have our off-peak or the winter period, and therefore it is very complementary to our sort of seasonal trend, and you can read into that sort of what benefit that gives us in terms of picking up, hopefully, some future demand as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Munira Carver from Nedbank. Please go ahead, Munira.
Hi, everyone. Hello, Eric and Glenn.
Hi, Manira.
Hi, Manira.
How are you keeping?
Good, and you?
Good.
So I just had two questions. The first one is on the asset sales. Which areas of the portfolio are you looking to sell or considering as potential like disposal targets? And then and then the second question was just around in the local market, what's happening with the competition that the other can manufacturers, are they operating, are they solvent, if you can give us any information on that. And maybe just with regards to the market share gains in Nigeria, what drove that win? Was it a pricing thing or was it competitive weakness or just some color on that? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Manira. I think the first question in terms of the type of assets, so I think at this stage we are considering a whole number of assets. So I think you should look at the trading update in terms of what we are trying to achieve through doing this. Of course, part of it is deleveraging. So as we mentioned, we want to make sure that we bring down the overall balance sheet risk. If we look at the share price performance, et cetera, over the last couple of months, I think it's clear that investors are concerned about the risk contained in our both our balance sheet as well as our portfolio. So I think we got to have a broad look at what we need to do and take a very balanced approach to say what can we do to reduce risk, whether it's operational risk, complexity, or even regional risk. So I think we have a strong place or plan in place of what we want to do. We're not going to disclose at this point in time exactly which assets. First of all, because it's not been confirmed, and the reason for that is that we need to look at the specific potential buyers for each one of these assets. But I think as we indicated to the market before, there are certain assets that we don't think fit into our portfolio going forward, and those are the ones where there's a concern around sustainability or complexity, and then the other one, of course, is just the risk profile is too high. So at this point, we're not going to disclose exactly which assets, but I think it's like I said, the objective should be very clear. We want to deleverage, but at the same time, we want to improve the business, the sustainability, but really the focus is to reduce the overall balance sheet risk that we have at the moment. Then your second question around the competitors in South Africa, this is actually a question I want to stay away from. We don't want to speculate about the situation with our competitors, other than saying, listen, they obviously experienced the exact same headwinds that we've experienced in terms of the impact of COVID, and I suspect it was probably even tougher on them. So that's only speculation. We've got no specific information to inform us on that. Of course, there's a whole lot of speculation in the market that we've heard about, but it's certainly not something that I would like to comment on in this call.
Munira, do you have any further questions?
No, that's great. Thank you so much, and well done on the results. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Naramore from Excelsior Capital. Please go ahead, Mark.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead.
Just four quick questions, just maybe starting with to add to James's point around the exports. Can you give us some more detail as to kind of the type of can that is? Is pricing kind of similar to your existing cans in SA? And also just, is there an option to use it just a can or is it can ends as well? Maybe you can just give some color on that.
Okay. So first one, unfortunately, we can't tell you where to or who it is, because those are confidential in terms of the contract that we agree to. I can confirm that it is dollar-based pricing, but it is based on existing contract that we have in South Africa. So Although it's dollar, it's very similar to the pricing we have at the moment. The other point to point out is that this is only can bodies. It does not include can ends. So it's only the can body.
And then just a second question around Nigeria. With this new recent big contract win, my understanding is you guys have about 1 billion can capacity and this kind of guidance on CapEx coming down. Are you happy that you don't have to expand in Nigeria, or is there kind of a what are the expansion plans there?
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, we think we have still significant headroom from what we had before. So historically, we were operating at levels of give or take 70% of that capacity. So there's still a good 30% capacity available to expand, and it's only once there's growth beyond that we need to reinvest. I think as we mentioned in our half-year call, we don't have any short-term plans for a further line in Nigeria. Of course, if demand keeps on going up, we can do so very quickly. Our factory in Nigeria has been designed to accommodate two production lines, and the footprint for the second one is already there. And therefore, the ability to install a second line, we can react very quickly. But there are no plans at this point in time to do so. I think we first want to see the Nigerian market growing more. So, on the back of market share gains, that's one thing. But I think we want to see the whole market growing further before we'll make the decision on a second line.
And then maybe just one more from me, so I give the other guys a chance. But regarding kind of the cost cutting you're guiding towards, is a lot of that in the numbers, or in what kind of incremental cost cutting can we expect going forward?
I think, first of all, yes, some of that's in the numbers, but not. So for instance, we've had very successful cost cutting in our plastics operation, the same in the food. And in the best can side. So the best can side, that's already built into the numbers, and we hope to do some more going forward. On the diff food side, that is a restructuring project that is currently sort of being executed. Most of those savings will only come through next year. In fact, the restructuring will only be completed by June, July next year. So although we expect a substantial change in profitability from the food going into next year, the full benefit of the restructuring will only be beyond June, July next year. But we, despite that, there's very significant turnaround that we expect from out of the food. And therefore, I think there's two things to take into account. As we mentioned in our half-year results, there was an amount of 48 million rand of restructuring cost built into the first half. We mentioned it would be a very similar amount that you can expect for the second half. And of course, all of that will not repeat itself next year. But then there's some of the benefits from phase one that's been completed will come through fully next year. And then the second phase, only a portion of that, it's thereafter that will ramp up. On the plastic side, they would have been profitable this year had it not been for the impact of COVID-19. So a new reinvigorated management team, I think they have done an incredible job to turn around the profitability of that business. And therefore, we should hopefully next year when we have normalized volumes, I think they should be much closer to their true potential.
Thanks a lot, Eric. I'll give the other guys a chance.
Pleasure.
Thank you. The next question comes from Todd Jennings from Savannah Tanks. Please go ahead, Todd.
Hi. Hello.
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask one quick question. Actually, two. Your conference call in March, you have made mention of the fact that you are looking at expanding outside of Africa, and that you now have the ability to do so because of some technical agreements or
I'm sorry, I can't hear the detail of this question.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's a bit better.
I was saying in the March teleconference, you had made mention that you were looking at expanding outside of Africa and that you now had the ability or the release from either some technical agreements or proprietary information.
Okay, I understand your question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, what we did say during that call is that historically we had a technical agreement with Crown Cork, and in terms of that agreement, we could only operate within Sub-Saharan Africa. That agreement was terminated at the end of last year, and hence that restriction does not apply anymore, and hence we can now go and expand into other territories. But what we made very clear is with the current level of debt on our balance sheet, we don't think that would be the right thing to do, and therefore we committed to say we will first deleverage the business, get the gearing completely under control, and it's only thereafter that we will consider expanding into these other territories. At the moment, we believe there's too much risk still on our balance sheet, and we first want to make sure we address those concerns before we start expanding into new territories.
From a fundamental point of view, not a technical point of view, but from a fundamental point of view, how valuable is that put option, if I can put it that way, for Nampac?
What put option? Sorry, I'm not clear on which put option you're talking about.
When I talk about the fact that you've been released from that technical restriction,
yes.
Is that putting you in a lot stronger position going forward?
Well, look, I think
barring the fact that, like you said, you don't really want to do anything right now, which I understand, but how important is that option now, so to speak?
Well, I think in the short term, the value would be very little until we start executing on that. But the long-term value, I think, is significant in the sense that most of the growth in specifically metals and beverage cans has happened in the rest of the world, where I think we all know what the situation was on the African continent. So I think, therefore, expanding our reach beyond Africa in the long term has got very good potential. But, of course, we can only do so once we have the financial muscle to do so.
Final question. I know, everybody's commented that maybe going into Africa was a bad idea. You haven't had the rate of return that you really wanted. Cost of entry into the business is a lot more difficult because of African situations. Third world kind of constraints, if you know what I mean. But yeah. Do you regret it in any way?
Yes, I do. So first of all, it did not work out the way we thought it would. That doesn't mean it was bad decisions at the time. But I think with the benefit of hindsight today, we might have taken different decisions. So if you look at both the operations we have in Africa, from an operational point of view and from a project execution, these were extremely good projects and investments. And you might recall that, you know, if you look at our share price, and I can't remember the exact details, but was in the order of, let's say, somewhere between 13 and 15 rand. The growth in those territories drove the share price all the way up to in excess of 40, and we were very profitable in Angola, and we are still very profitable in Nigeria. So, but of course, with it came significant risk. And the market appears to be very concerned about the risk that we are carrying, not just on our balance sheet as a result of the funds invested in those territories, but also from an operational point of view. So that's something we need to take into account, and I think one need to reevaluate those investments, and you know, and hence I'm saying we would be more cautious at this stage to expand further into Africa, and hence why we said in our mid-year results that we are not going to expand further into Africa at this point in time until we see the market either growing substantially or the risk come down substantially, or, and of course, good profitability. So at the moment, yes, Nigeria is still very profitable. Angola at the moment, you know, we're saying we just got to make sure that we don't incur big losses there. The potential is certainly still there for Nigeria, but we have to look at the overall sort of portfolio, the amount of risk that both these investments carry with them, and look at them and say, you know, has it been successful? Well, where we stand right now, I think it's fair to say it has not been. What is the potential going forward? Well, I think for both, there's still very good potential going forward. But, you know, we have to look at the broader picture.
Okay, would you be, but would you say that you paid your school fees already when it comes to Nigeria and Angola?
Well, absolutely. So I think it's like I say, you know, going into these territories and to learn how to operate is tough. And we've done so, and we demonstrated that we can operate successfully there. And I've said it before, both those operations are the most efficient operations in our beverage can portfolio overall. So we operate at very high efficiencies, we operate at very low spoilage, and hence operationally, these are very good businesses. Of course, the macroeconomic environment had a dramatic impact with the collapse of the oil price, and that put a completely different spin on not only the success of those operations, but on the fortunes of Nampak. And you know, that, unfortunately, that was not within our control. So, you know, I think it's fair to say, well, could we have foreseen that there's bigger risk in these markets? Absolutely. And hence, we've always operated with much higher margins in those businesses than you would typically have in a developed country or even South Africa. So, yes, there is more risk, but hence the reason why profitability or margins in general are much higher. But of course, you know, when you have a complete collapse of an economy or the oil price that, you know, these economies heavily rely on, it will have its consequences, and therefore, you know, it, and unfortunately, it will show in the results. And given the high sort of percentage of Nampak's overall portfolios that were invested in these oil-dependent territories, I think it's fair to say, I think we were over-invested in those markets, and especially given, like I said, their reliance on a single commodity, and hence, to a large extent, it took the sort of control out of our hands in terms of the profitability. But in terms of school fees, I think we've paid it. We know how to operate there. We've demonstrated we can do it, and therefore the confidence to operate there is very high.
Thank you. The next question comes from Brent Maddell from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, Brent.
Good afternoon. There's three questions on my side, if I could. Just with regards to the extended contract in South Africa, I think you've indicated that you've got 85% of that customer. Can you just give us an indication whether that's unchanged relative to what you previously had before the extension of this contract? That's my first question. My second question is just with regards to both the extended contracts in South Africa and Nigeria. Over the years, we've always seen that there's been a tendency, as you've either renewed or extended contracts, that it's at a lower margin. Without giving specifics, can you just give us an indication whether it's at the same or whether it's at lower margins relative to what was previously agreed? And lastly, if you could just give us a little bit of color on Angola and what the situation is there for you right now. At the interim stage, it looked like you guys had lost quite a bit of volume. Are you guys still struggling to get volumes? Has the situation improved? If you can just give us some update. Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks, Brent. I think, first of all, the contract in South Africa, so this is a very large customer we've had. We used to have 100% allocation there. And that drops to 85%. But I should mention that this was intentionally that we dropped it. We did not apply for 100% allocation, and there are strategic reasons why we did that. Your second question in Nigeria, I think, just remind me that your second question, Brent.
I just was asking just on both of the contracts in South Africa and Nigeria.
Oh, yes, the margin.
They come at lower margin.
Yeah, so of course it's a competitive market, and where we have to defend our market share, generally, you know, margins will come under pressure. I mean, one has to be cognizant of the fact that there's competition. So quite often there is a contraction of margin. So I think, you know, in these cases, there is a balance between volume and holding on to higher margins. So yes, it is fair to say that there will be a slight contraction of margins on those specific contracts before, of course, you take into account the impact of volume. And then your last, you had a third question as well.
Just with regards to Angola, if you could just give us an update on the volumes.
Oh, yes.
Whether you've seen any recovery since the interim stage.
Okay, so Angola, you know, this is the market where volumes has dipped the lowest. It really dropped to, I think we said the year before, you know, the volumes halved, and it's slightly more than halved again this year. We've seen it bottoming out about 3-4 months ago, and since then volumes started increasing, and it's already so through the period. We haven't gone into a trading loss in terms of if you ignore forex losses, etc. From a pure trading income point of view, before forex losses, the business has basically been on a break-even level. And once you add back depreciation, in other words, on an EBITDA basis, it's actually made quite a decent EBITDA still. But I have to point out that, of course, the Angolan market has gone through a quite a substantial forex devaluation, and as a result, you will see some forex losses on that side as well. So if you ask me where are we currently, so at the dip, of course, you know, we couldn't maintain a cash positive result for that specific month, but for the last 2 months, we are already at the point where the volume started recovering to the point where it is at a trading break-even level. And I have to say, one thing that plays a very substantial impact on volumes in Angola is their ability to export cans. And they've been very hard hit by the fact that they had to close their borders as a result of COVID. And specifically the trading going into the DRC has been affected. There was word that they were going to open the market in September, and we thought it actually opened. It did not. So at this point in time, they tell us that they hope that the border will open during October. And indications we have and is that event on its own could potentially double the volumes that we are selling today. So it could have quite a substantial impact to really make a big difference to our volumes, but it has not happened yet. And although volumes are already increasing quite pleasingly, the big event that we have waiting for is the opening of the borders to other territories.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Rajay Ambakar from Excelsior Capital. Please go ahead, Rajay.
Hi, Eric, Glenn, good afternoon, and congrats on securing some nice contracts. Got a couple of questions. Maybe just the first one is just relating to Div Food SA, you know, where you lost the major contract. Can you maybe just talk about, you know, I know you're taking costs out to improve the profitability, but maybe what are the prospects of securing new business within that division?
Okay, so the turnaround strategy in that division is basically built on three different components. One of those does include the gaining new margin, volumes in one of the regions. So there's a specific action plan that we do have to take on new volume, and I think we're starting to make some progress on that side. But the other part of that restructuring is all about removing some complexity, first of all, out of our Vanderbijl Park operation, and I'll expand on that a little bit just now. The other one is the two-piece food cans that we used to produce for the big customer contract that we lost. Most of those volumes came out of our Roslyn operation. And if you look at the remaining volume we have now and with some potential going forward, we have enough capacity in our other two-piece line down in the Western Cape in Epping to do all the volume. And therefore, by consolidating those two operations, we'll be able to take out a significant amount of fixed costs out of the business for one. And then secondly, it also takes away the need to transport the raw materials from the ports up to Gauteng. So as you probably heard, ArcelorMittal is not producing tin plate in South Africa anymore. And as a result, we're importing all our tin plate. So what's happening at the moment, all those materials are, you know, either come in through the port, whether it's Durban or Cape Town, and then they get transported all the way up to Gauteng. We process the material there, produce either cans or other components, and then we ship most of that down to the coast again, and in this case, a lot of it to the Western Cape. And hence what we're doing now is we're consolidating, first of all, the two-piece manufacturing in Epping, and then there's a lot of component manufacturing that we're also moving down to the Western Cape into our existing factories. And therefore, that not only reduces the fixed cost, but also that variable cost of transport. That's not just destroying value. It's also, you've got an impact on your ability to give good customer service because you are further away from your customers. So there's a number of things that we think should have a material impact on the food, and hence why we are quite confident that even without gaining additional volume, we should actually see the vision, the overall profitability increasing substantially next year.
Thanks. And maybe just a second question just on the balance sheet and the debt. You know, you've given sort of that indication of where the covenants are as we progress into 2021. But just wanted to get you some idea on how you see that debt to EBITDA level moving to, say, within the 3x that you need to be by September. How much of that is in your sort of planning is asset sales versus sort of almost organic deleveraging from better profitability and reduced capex? And maybe just related to that, then also, where kind of do you think sort of a long-term sustainable debt to EBITDA sort of level would be for the business?
Lynn, you want to respond to that?
Sure. I think, you know, getting it back to a 3x cover is more just going back to normal trading levels. You know, if you have a look at the historic EBITDA numbers and you relate them to, you know, the debt levels post the disposals, as I indicated earlier in my opening, that if it wasn't for COVID, we would have been probably within these covenant levels with a reasonable amount of headroom. So if the businesses can get back to just a normal trading level, it can sustain quite good positions within that 3x. What we are looking to do is actually take a lot of risk out of this balance sheet because we don't particularly want it to trade at that high level, you know, going forward. So it's far better for us to look at a combination of self-help programs internally, recovery of profitability, and then a reduction of the long-term borrowings, and to get the complementary effect of both coming through in a less risky balance sheet going forward.
Well, I think if I can just add to that, so of course the one thing is the requirement to get to within the covenant level. So as Len pointed out, normal trading should actually get us back to within the covenant. However, we did commit to also sell some assets, and there's two reasons for that. First of all, I think the lenders want to see some certainty of the debt coming down. And the second one is, if we can only remain just inside a covenant level, other than the stress that it's putting on all of us as executives, it also limits our ability to take advantage of some of those growth opportunities in the rest of the world. So there's two reasons for selling assets. The one is deleverage, but like I say, it's not only to get back to inside the covenant. We want to make sure that we get to well within the covenant so that we can actually start growing in other parts of the world as well.
Thanks. And maybe just a last question. With these covenants being relaxed, what was the cost of that?
There certainly has been a cost associated with it. There are certain pricing mechanisms within the covenants that will, you know, kick in, and we will fully disclose those as we go into the full results presentation. It's on a tiered basis, and depending across which facility gets used, and it will be depending on what the covenant comes out on at a quarterly basis. But the glide path is, as we've indicated, and there certainly would be an increased cost associated with it. We have drafted into the term sheets that would, you know, the remeasurement of the covenants would be, you have to take into account those particular increased costs.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mila Mafanya from Afina Capital. Please go ahead, Mila.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for the call. Just three questions from my side. The first is just around the funding package, the new funding package. Can you just give a little bit more detail? You have signaled it is going to be earnings accretive going forward, but if you could just maybe give us flesh it out in a little bit more detail. The second question is just on the covenants. Is the measurement of the covenants in terms of how, for example, some of the African cash was treated, is that the same with these revised covenants, or have there been some changes? If I can just start with those two questions first.
Right. If I can maybe answer you. We were, when we first created the facility in 2018 in September, as I indicated earlier, there was significant headroom for a potential acquisition at the time. We've been paying commitment fees on that, and probably unnecessarily, but we've kept the headroom in that facility, you know, to potentially, you know, cater for headroom. But you have to actually be able to produce the EBITDA to use it. So the intention has been to say, let's not, you know, pay additional commitment fees in the structure unnecessarily. Now, in the pricing mechanism, once it all settles in, we will have to work through that and make sure that we get, you know, a long-term sustainable benefit. And I think overall, once we've got past the kind of deleveraging period of September 2021, it will be beneficial to the earnings. In the short term, there will certainly be a cost associated with higher gearing until we get down to the normal covenant levels. So there will be a short-term cost, which I think is, you know, probably will be addressed through addressing the capital structure quicker and reviewing the portfolio will reduce the impact of that. In terms of the African cash treatment, the treatment is exactly the same as it was before.
Thank you. And just maybe the last thing to flesh out is maybe on this Elopak JV. Can you kind of just maybe talk around what that will look like, capital requirements required? Is it a, you know, is it a distribution agreement? Is it, you know, your participation more on the manufacturing side? Could you maybe just give a bit more detail around those type of mechanics?
Okay, thanks, Mila. So the Elopak one is a very exciting development in the sense that there's a number of sort of components to it. The first one is, as you might know, we are currently producing gable top cartons from our operation in Isithebe. And so this JV will allow us to basically export a lot of those products into Africa. But then it will also not only increase our footprint or our potential market for gable tops, but also it will allow us to enter the aseptic part of the market. So as you might know, there's a very well-known big competitor that's very dominant in that part of the market, specifically in South Africa. And this is not something where we've got capability at the moment. So this will also allow us to start exploring that part of the market. And aseptic in South Africa is massive at the moment, specifically if you look at the growth of long-life milk and that type of thing. I think it opens up not just the South African market, but the whole sub-Saharan Africa. So from a CapEx point of view, the production of gable top cartons in Isithebe, no need for CapEx there unless we've got a massive expansion in volume, low CapEx requirement. The main CapEx or the main capital requirement in the short term is more working capital. And then as we develop more and more markets and we find that we run out of capacity, then of course we'd be happy to look at further production capability. But at the moment, I don't foresee any large CapEx requirement. At this stage, it's more utilizing the existing footprint we have.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Khosi Rahube from Citi. Please go ahead, Khosi.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Just a quick question, Glenn. Can you just perhaps give us an indication on the magnitude of Forex losses? I'm aware that obviously the currency hasn't yet closed for the end of the financial year, but I think if I recall, in the first half, there was about 200 million rand FX losses. Just a bit of guidance in terms of the second half, please.
Thanks, Khosi. The rate of those Forex losses has slowed, and it would not be at the same rate for the second half. So I think that was a reasonable kind of comment, but I have to overlay on that we, remembering that in the hyperinflation economies, or economy of Zimbabwe, we have to wait, obviously, till the closing rates of the end of today, that we then translate the entire year's worth of earnings at. And it will impact certain of the numbers. So I don't think it will be at the same rate as the first half, but there's also the hyperinflation angle of it all, so it will settle down once we get the very, very detailed computer models that have to be applied to that for the year end. But I don't think it will be double the first half.
Okay, that's useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Charles Bowles from Titanium Capital. Please go ahead, Charles.
Afternoon, Eric, Glenn. Thanks for the call. Three questions, if I may. The 800 million rand can body exports, I'm trying to get some understanding of how that's viable, given that you seem to be exporting fresh air, which wouldn't seem to be cost competitive. Is it in component form or is it semi-made up? Maybe if you could just provide a little bit more detail.
Okay. First of all, it's not 800 million rand, it's 800 million bodies. Secondly, the reason for this opportunity comes from two things. The first one, in the rest of the world, beverage can demand on the back of sustainability and the push against single-use plastic, etc., is enormous. So that's been a trend that's been building. And with the I don't want to say the banning of single-use plastic, but that pressure being applied in both Europe and North America, there's a big push for beverage cans, and hence the demand for beverage cans in those parts of the world has exploded, and the existing manufacturers cannot keep up. So they are in the process of building capacity, but that will take a year or more to come on stream. So we, and hence the reason why we are benefiting from a short-term sort of window to supply the shortage. The second thing that had an impact, and this is very different from South Africa, and that is that during this COVID period and specifically the lockdowns, etc., it put a lot more emphasis on home consumption, and with specifically beer sales, home consumption grew exponentially. And as a result, created a massive shortage in those markets. And as a result, I would guess that they've been compromised in building volume for their own peak. And so it's twofold. First of all, there's excess demand for the existing capacity. So although that will be filled in the short term, thereafter you don't know to what extent the trend towards more sustainable and green packaging is going to continue. But interesting enough, sorry, the point I tried to make about South Africa, that's actually very sad that the ban on alcohol sales didn't allow us to benefit from that in South Africa. So typically where you would have seen bigger home consumption in South Africa, because of the ban, people couldn't buy more beer cans or whatever, and hence we didn't see that upside. In fact, we saw the exact opposite. We saw the flip side, and that was because of the ban. Not only did we not sell alcoholic products, we also didn't sell some of the complementary products. And an example there is like gin and tonic. So where if somebody couldn't buy gin, they also didn't buy the mixer can that goes with it. Or brandy and Coke. You couldn't buy the brandy, hence how much Coke can you drink? So South Africa saw the exact opposite of what happened in the rest of the world. But to get back to your question, it's probably a 1 year window of opportunity. And I have to be cautious, but there's actually further options that we are exploring at the moment, but you know, that hasn't crystallized yet, so I'm not going to go there yet, but hopefully by the time we get to our results presentation, we can have some further good news. But at this stage, let's assume that is not there for the moment.
That's a very informative and useful answer. Sorry, just as an aside, why is it only canned body and not end and tab? Is that just where the shortage is overseas? There's sufficient capacity of end and tab?
It's exactly that. I mean, people are also looking at potentially buying the ends, but the shortage in capacity right now is sitting on canned bodies. So you're right, to export empty air across the world is very expensive, and therefore you can imagine the shortage that they must be going through, that they're actually prepared to do this.
Very useful. Two other questions, if I may. Alcohol volumes. Could you give us some sense of how you see that picking up both presently and in terms of maybe line of sight for the next couple of months from the kind of orders you're seeing?
I must be honest, I think I'm not qualified to answer that question. So that's going to depend very much on the health of the South African consumer. So, you know, we are already starting to see quite a big pull-through coming through. But I think it's very difficult to make a prediction for what this peak is going to look like and ultimately what the health of people's disposable income is going to be like. Like I say, at the moment we are seeing a very healthy upliftment of volumes. It's not back yet to where it used to be. But interestingly enough, the slower portion at the moment is actually more on the CSD side than the alcoholic side. So I think on the alcohol side, sort of growth back to normal levels has been heading in the right direction quicker. On the soft drink side, it's been slower, and I think that's because of the fact that we're not having social events in big stadiums allowed yet. So typically, you know, you can't take a beer can into a stadium, but soft drink, of course. That's a very different thing, and I think through this period we realize to what extent specifically soft drink, and to a large extent beer as well, but is linked to big social events. And big social events is not only for in-stadium consumption, but as we know, when there's a big rugby or soccer game or something on, there's a lot of socializing happening around that, and that drives a lot of consumption, and we're not back there yet. So, of course, now the resumption of professional sports, etc., is very positive for us, and hence we hope that it will recover a lot quicker. But as I mentioned earlier, I think we can expect overall economic activity to be still a bit muted for the next 6 to 12 months, and hence the reason why we looked at exploring all these other options to boost our profitability, like the export, etc., while we wait for the market to normalize.
And Eric, last one, if I may, the export order, I'm just trying to get a sense where it's coming from. Is that stock, is it fortuitous? Fortuitous is probably the wrong word. Is that was that from stock build-up during the...
No, so that's an easy one. You might recall before, we had one line in Springs that we said we're going to restructure and take out the crew from that completely. So we had one line in Springs that was basically going to be idle, and therefore we had this wonderful opportunity where we had immediate capacity that we can bring online, and literally we only had to bring labor back to man that. But other than that, it was existing capacity that, for all practical purposes, would have been standing idle.
Just to be clear, if for some reason this didn't recur, mm-hmm. You would at worst turn off the spring line like you anticipated originally, and still keep running the remaining capacity.
Correct.
There's not additional surplus capacity.
No. So it's sad in the sense that we've just retrenched a lot of that staff. So unfortunately, we've already incurred the restructuring cost on that, and that was already included in our first half results. So this is really just, I want to say, money for jam coming on top.
Need some good news. That's perfect. Thanks so much for the input. Very useful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Pleasure, man.
Eric, we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments before we conclude?
I think yes. I think, you know, overall, it's certainly been a very tough period for us to trade through. It was heartbreaking to see our share price declining on the back of a lot of things that was completely outside of our control. Yes, we acknowledge we've certainly made some mistakes in the past. We learned from it. We certainly have managed to score some own goals, but we learned from that. I think one is the fact that we exited the glass business, and we did so literally just in time. I think if we were still in that business going into the lockdown, I think that would have been disastrous. And I really feel for some of my not colleagues, let's say the other people in the packaging industry that really gone through a tough time as a result. But, you know, we're gonna keep on reevaluating the portfolio. There are no holy cows in this portfolio, and therefore anything that's not giving us the returns that we're looking for will be under consideration. And like I say, we need to make sure that we bring the overall risk of the portfolio under control. We got to make sure that we have enough cash to start exploring some of those growth opportunities in the rest of the world. But in the meantime, we're not going to sit on our fingers and wait for this to happen. As you've seen with some of these new contracts, the extensions we had, the exports, etc., there's a lot of opportunities that we are exploring, and the ILOPAC joint venture, etc. And we're going to keep on looking for other opportunities. And, you know, we want to make sure that we align the fortunes of the people managing the business, the management, with our shareholders. You know, we hate seeing the share price where it is right now. And as a result, we're going to do everything in our ability to make sure we give the market comfort that we can operate sustainably going forward. And it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how quick the market recovers. But I think we've got some built-in insurance in terms of some of these export contracts. then I think through some of the disposals, I think we can fast track the deleveraging. That's it from our side. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.